All right. Okay, before I introduce the reason why you're here, I'd like to tell you that my name is Barbara Stepp. And we've done a lot of work to make this happen. We're with Excellence Quest. Before we do, I'd like to share with you who our staff are, because they're the people who are experts in the city of Chicago. They can answer any question that you need answered. And also, they can help you out with exercises too. Those that know NLP. No, just kidding. First of all, the people who made all this possible and worked really hard, where is Carol Mitchell? Thank you. Carol hasn't slept in 3 days. She's also my personal assistant. Kevin Mitchell is our sound man and technical expert. And where is Ann Jarmaine? Is she gone? She's out working. There's Ann. Ann knows everything there is to know about the product, so see her. She can sell you and will sell you anything. Let's see, who else do I need to remember? Mary Rothschild, stand up. Mary Rothschild is an intern. These are all Chicagoans who can help you with just about anything you ever wanted to know about Chicago, but were too tired to ask. Oh no, that's the name of my book, isn't it? Reed in the back. Reed is also a trainer. Steve Robbins, master trainer, right back there. Steve and I will be doing a seminar in March on Think and Grow Young, because we're both just kids. We're also writing a book of the same name. Jonathan McDonald, right there. And Jonathan Altfeld, who is a trainer and has his own website, which is a really great one, right there. Did I leave anybody out? Did I leave anybody out? Okay, so what we're going to do without any further ado is we're going to give you the reason you came here. We don't have to introduce this man. We'll just tell you. Here's Richard.
It's on? Great. Well, good morning. Welcome to Chicago. I know I flew in this morning, and you have the longest airport in the world. That's all I can say. I kept walking and walking, and there was more airport, and I kept looking at the signs. And when I finally went down to the baggage thing, I guess the baggage goes by some other route because it took a long time to get there. I kept sitting there watching this thing go round and round, thinking, what an induction this is. You know, but it's better. I was just in Europe, and I have to tell you that our president made me proud to be an American. Any man that will literally tell the whole world that oral sex is not having an affair, well, let's just say he's got a different wife than I do. Excuse me, maybe his standards are a little different than mine, but I have to tell you, the English sure took that all in stride. They just, like, kind of wrote that down. Having an oral sex is not adultery. Most of them just kind of nodded. They went, of course, you know. I said, you mean with a woman? I'll tell you, they got real quiet, all of the politicians over there, you know, because I don't know what it is. Can you take some of the bass off of this? It's kind of ringy. Make it sound a little bit more like me. There you go. Thank you. I wish I had a deep voice like that. By the way, that big black guy over there is who you take your complaints to, by the way. I like that. I come in and they go, and this guy's going to take care of any problem you have, Richard. And I went, great. I said, I've been in this position before. Bill Clinton described it perfectly. But you got to hand it to Larry Flint, man. Larry Flint, who is one of my models of what a good American is. offered Martin Starr a job working for Hustler magazine, right? And because he's been able to get pornography out to more people faster than anyone in the history of the world, this is what my idea of a dangerous human being is. They hire special prosecutors, in case you guys don't know, because they're supposed to be unbiased, right? And this guy's like doesn't have a stick up his ass or anything. But, you know, I believe he was the Whitewater prosecutor, and then he got onto this Monica thing, and he's really obsessed, and I just really think that maybe him and his wife need to watch some movies, don't you guys? So I sent them some of my favorites. See, I figure, you know, if you, I sent them one called Try This. The idea that this guy was a judge, doesn't that scare you? Scares the crap out of me, you know, because it's all, I can hear banjos when this guy talks, you know. And I mean, the idea that they let this guy be a judge, and I mean, this guy is just an independent prosecutor. I'm totally fair. I'm not biased. Let's get the bastard. To me, like, one of the things we're going to do, by the way, this is, I like this. When I found out this was an introduction to DHE, that means that some of you here probably have some background in neuro-linguistic programming. And I want to clear something up, by the way. I made that up, okay? It's not real. It says in all the books, although I haven't even seen some of them anymore. This all started because I got pulled over by the police. And in the old days in California, they used to say to you, you know, your name, and then it would say profession, or as they called it in those days, occupation. And I suddenly had to stop, and I thought, what the hell do I do for a living? You know, and I looked up at this highway patrolman with the mirrored sunglasses looking down, and I looked down on the floor of the car, and there were three books. There was the programming manual for PDP 1134A, that's back when computers had tape drives, and a floppy disk was this big. It's an RK05, that thick, and it only held a megabyte, right? You know, when you wanted to go over somebody's house and play a program, you needed a truck, you know. And I had one of these in my house. I bought it in a bankruptcy sale. You'll like this, a bank went bankrupt. My bank. I went down to the bank and it said closed, right? And I read in the newspaper one day, some months later, and it said bankruptcy sale, right? And it listed all the stuff in it. So I called up the newspaper and I said, I'm sorry, you've made a terrible mistake. I said, this sale is actually a week later. Thank you. Can't drink the water here either, huh? I'm from San Francisco, and you know, it's just no way. We get our water from so far away. They dammed up some valley. It used to be nice Native Americans living in this beautiful place that looked like Yosemite. And somebody said, well, we'll plug up this end of the valley, fill it full of water, pipe it through big, giant steel pipes for a century or two, just to distill it, you know, give it that flavor. Then what we'll do is we'll put all around it sewers. Then what we'll do is we'll have an earthquake or two, put a few cracks in both of them, right? That's just for flavoring. But there was used to be, not, it wasn't Avion, it was that other one that when the people, Perrier, have you guys heard here that they tested the Perrier wells a few years ago? And it turned out that pissing in a glass would have been more pure. You actually, if you wanted the full effect of Perrier, you had to take a shit in the glass and then piss in it, right? Spin it around like that, put a few bubbles in it, right? And go, and this is the purest water of France. And it might well be. I'm just a revengeful person. I did a hypnosis workshop in France. That was it for me. I never went back. There's just something about 300 or 400 people going, now, I mean, let's, and go all the way down into trance, down into trance. They keep inviting me back to Paris, and I go, what did I ever do to you? And they don't think it's funny because I go to England and tell these jokes, and they've traveled all the way across the ocean, and there they are, you know, with bright little shiny faces and lots of hope. And I tell them, look, you know, I teach everywhere. I've taught in Nairobi, and I won't go to Paris. And they go, what's the problem? And I go, it's a tonality thing, you know, because I tell them, I go, look, think about it. I was born in New Jersey, right? I was born in the bad tonality state. Right? Now, if I can get out of it, you know, I used to get up in the morning and look in the mirror and say, yeah, now things don't look so bad, do they? And the mirror would say back, they're fucked. They're totally fucked. The mirror was into pacing. By the way, for those of you, I know that some of you came here, you have no background. I expect you to be able to help the others, okay? We were riding in this morning, and because I got in at the lovely hour of 5:30, and because I wanted to miss the traffic, and because that's when the plane landed, and if you get there ahead or behind it, it's not so much fun. We used to do that when I was in the military. I believe the term they used was jump. Because I remember turning around and looking at this guy going, out of the plane? And the guy said, yes, why do you think we gave you a parachute? And I said, if the plane had a problem, you know, I'd be the first one out there jumping. And I said, but as it is, and I heard this, because I wasn't jumping. I learned catalepsy, you know, that hypnotic thing where you're rigid, right? They got me up, they hooked that thing on there, and my hand went up there with it, right? And they tried everything. There's nothing. I had 50 guys this big, and no way they could get my hand open. I was like one of those catatonics in the mental hospital. By the way, they said you couldn't get to those people years and years and years ago. I went to a mental hospital, not as a patient, but actually as a guest. Virginia Satir didn't drive much. How many of you know who Virginia is or ever saw her or anything? She was wonderful. She's a lot nicer than I am. I mean, Virginia was just so nice, you know, but one of the things is she traveled like 360 days a year. She had a BMW that she had for 12 years, and it had like 400 miles on it. And I picked her up at the airport, and she asked me to jumpstart her car, and I went downstairs and put cables on it and got it started. And then I went up and I said, your car's running. I went out and drove it up and down the freeway. The battery's charged. And she said, well, she said, what side was the steering wheel on? And I said, well, I believe it's... I stopped and I thought, well, you know, I didn't really pay much attention to that. I said, I didn't know there was like a choice. You can, you know. She said, you know, I go to a lot of places where they drive on the other side of the street. And I thought, she's lying. Well, guess what? There are whole damn countries. The whole damn countries, they got everything in the wrong side of the road. I went to Ireland, and what I like is they're so friendly there. They said, I went out and I was driving to the hotel, and every time we'd make a turn, and I'd go, and I'd grab the wheel and turn it, you know. But there was no wheel there. You know, it's really hard. Every time I would get in a car with somebody, I'd get in the side with the steering wheel on because it should be the passenger side. And I'm totally confused. And then I like the way they said, well, you know, what you need to do to get used to it. And this guy goes and gives me the keys to his brand new BMW. Okay, we have a name for that in neurolinguistic programming. It's called stupid. You do not give a maniac the keys to your car when he's going, I don't get it. Why are they all driving on the wrong side of the road? So I looked at him and I said, you are insured. And he went, well, I have insurance to cover anything you hit. And I said, the word is everything, not anything. So we got in this car and, you know, of course, the first thing I do is I get in the car and I go to adjust the rearview mirror, but it's over here. Right? And I said, well, how hard could this be? Actually, it turns out it's pretty hard. I did fine until I made that first left-hand turn, you know, and then I came out on the wrong side of the road, right? Well, I don't think it was the wrong side of the road, but all the people driving off into the ditches, I think they did, because I have a philosophy about automobiles. Mine is they gave you an accelerator for only one reason, and that's to press it. And I don't care. Some people say, you know, that red means stop and green means go and yellow means go very, very fast. To me, I don't give a damn about lights, right? I'm too busy watching everyone get out of the way. That I believe that the bigger the car you drive, the more you can go any fucking place you want to. So when the oil crisis came along and everybody bought these cars that are this fucking big, I bought one the size of an aircraft carrier. And I love cars like that. I want a 63 Lincoln is my idea of an economy car. Right? Did you guys see that movie Death Race 2000? That's the car I own. It's the car from that movie. They made 2,000 of those. It's called a Mercury Marauder. And I put teeth on the front of it. Big teeth, about this big on the front, because it's got this engine in it that's, you know, 500 cubic engine bored out to everything. And it's like you step on it and it goes, and you barely touch it. And it's, even though they made it out of a Lincoln body, they put like a little tiny chassis on the Lincoln thing, and they just made it so it would go incredibly fast, which I like in a car, but it's very big, very heavy, and it's got the front, like the hood, it's like from here to that mirror thing there, right, you know, and when you open it, it darkens the sun. And smog control? Don't believe in it. I believe that the only thing is that when we're done using dinosaurs, we'll move on to a new energy source. That since energy can't be created or destroyed, how can you run out of it? See that guy up there, Einstein? The name ring a bell? Okay, he's another guy who wore leather jackets and rode motorcycles and had funny ideas. And oh, by the way, I finally went out and on the net and found out, by the way, I think we should all bow our heads in silence, that I'm on my deathbed. I thought I was in Chicago. But apparently I'm sick and dying and didn't know it. Could this be wishful thinking? could be. I found out there's an email place you can go to. It gives you every petition for every state and nationally, and an automatic thing to write your congressman, any other congressman, and what's his name, the pervert? President, that's right, I remember. This guy is, I've heard of people that have audacity. I thought I had audacity. I thought I was the killer of sacred cows. No way. Here I am going from country to country, and every morning the headlines are a double entendre. He's out teaching language patterns. Right? Headlines. Congress deals a new blow to American president. Clinton comes to England, and it's spelled C-U-M. Then I see him on TV. I don't know about you guys, but I don't understand this. First, he's in Ireland, okay, hanging out with Tony Blair and his mistress. Do you know that his wife had the same job Hillary had? They were constitutional lawyers. And it just mirrors everything a little too closely, and they're just bosom buddies. There they were in Ireland together. And, you know, I took an ad out in the classifieds over when I was in England. Five counties missing, please return to owner. I don't know if any of you would follow that, but it seems like there was no such thing as Northern Ireland. And then, see, I put a little equation there. Kuwait, given back, right? Northern Ireland, question mark. See, to me, when you steal a country, see, like, I wrote the president, and I said, gee, we got so damn insane. Nice name for a guy to run a country, don't you think? So damn insane, excuse me. You know, and they always go, no, it's Sodom. And I go, yeah, I'll bet it is, you know. When he said he was going to lick Bush, he wasn't kidding. Boy, let me tell you, it's a strange world we live in. You know, people say, well, what do you think about the state of affairs? Takes on a whole new meaning now, doesn't it, really? And what do you think of Clinton's foreign policy? And I said, well, I don't know much about it, but I saw him there with the drunken head of Russia. After he left Tony Blair, he went to Russia, and they showed a thing where Boris came in, threw his arm around Clinton's head like this, and gave him a few nookies, and said, I love Babs. I don't make this stuff up. I would never be able to be that weird. Babs? What's going on here? I don't understand. Then he goes back and meets Tony Blair in England. And I didn't realize this, but the hotel I was staying in just happens to be down the street from 10 Downing Street and is like the only place where you could go and have breakfast in a suit and tie without looking utterly ridiculous. You know, because you just can't walk into a place, a fish and chips place, dressed to the nines. So this hotel is where all they have all the power breakfasts. And since I don't really like to get up till the crack of noon, you know, I do fine when I go back this way, you know, because actually it's, you know, I'm fine because I'm still the middle of the night, so I'm okay. But see, I was in England, then I went back to San Francisco, and then I came here, so I don't really know what time it is. People say, how do you deal with jet lag? And I go, yeah, I like it. To me, you just kind of keep going into it. A lot of people say, well, you know, I've learned that if you do this, this, and this, you know, you can beat jet lag. And I go, why would you want to beat it? You know, I mean, to me, it's just another altered state that keeps you from being like them. Because you have to keep in mind, there I sat, right, in this nice place. And since I was there for a month and a half, and I am twice a year, they kind of look at me as sort of a fixture in this place now. They go, oh, don't mind that. That's just Dr. Bandler. Doesn't look much like a doctor to me, but, you know, he's here all the time. I guess everything's okay. And then sitting next to me is John Major at a table talking to some people. And all these, because it's only not the, you know, the people who are in power. It doesn't matter who you are. There's still only one place to have breakfast. So they all go sit in this great big place in suits and ties, and it's the worst food. I don't know what it is, but the English can't cook an egg for the life of them. I don't know what the problem is. I even went back and explained it to them. You take the egg, and you just drop it in the pan, right? You don't do anything to it. And they look at you, and they go, nah, you're kidding. You can't do that. We have to do something to make it that funny color. And I don't know about you guys, but there's something about, like, when you say cook, it means you apply heat to something, right? Especially eggs. I don't know about you guys, but I like my eggs so that they're not going. To me, you know, when I say cook something, I want it cooked. It's like, you know, I grew up in Chinatown and in San Francisco, and I have a pretty high tolerance for food. Believe me, the stuff that I've eaten and stuff. I've eaten stuff before it was even dead, you know. It's just as it goes by, you bite it. But I'll tell you, there's some stuff over there that, I have a trouble with tofu. I think that tofu should be coming out of you, not going into you. I'm the kind of guy that likes to go into the supermarket and go to that section with the tofu and grab some, you know, like this. And then you do this, you could take the bag and you go like this, you go, and squeeze the bag and it goes onto somebody like this. And I don't care, the bigger they are, the tougher they are, the more squeamish they are. You know, I mean, I won a whole fight one time in a full contact karate when I was a teenager with just a little tofu, you know, because they, you know, I was there and my teacher, you know, it's kind of like the kung fu thing, you know, do, 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 do. It's how did you defend the honor of every one of us. You're going to fight this guy. And they pointed him out, and this guy was huge. He had muscles glistening everywhere. He stood in there, and like 16 guys got around him and threw steel marbles at him, and he went like that, and I went, oh, shit. You know that's universal, by the way, that particular comment. You know that they filmed some people skydiving. You know that movie thing, Real Videos? I love that, you know. It's actually documented stupidity. But here they are. They're all skydiving down, and they're being filmed. And on the third jump, the guy filming it, noticed that he didn't have a parachute. And he's like this, and suddenly the camera goes, boom, like this. They had the film at 11. The film survived. The person taking the film did not. But he went like this. He looked down. He looked at, and he went like that. Like, that's really going to help. But I can tell you exactly what he said inside his head, because I know internal dialogue. He said, oh, shit. Right? But didn't matter. The next thing he said was, you know. But, I mean, to me, I looked at this guy. This guy was huge, and he was perfect. And I was the kind of person that went, yeah, I practiced a lot. You know, the teacher would say, you know, yes. And I'd go, oh, yeah. And I'll be right back. I'd sneak outside because I knew he couldn't hit me if I wasn't there. So I think this was his revenge. And I just knew this guy. And I kind of had a cold. Well, it wasn't really a cold. I believe the term is hangover. Well, I used to drink. I don't drink anymore because I get in too much trouble. Because it's just like driving. I believed if you were going to drink, why fool around? You took a bottle of tequila, right? You take a hit off of it, you feel pretty good. Then you take a couple more hits, and you begin to feel invincible, right? And then you find yourself a big row of motorcycles and kick it over. That's to start the evening off. Then a month later, you wake up in a foreign country, right? Usually in the hospital. And some guy named Colonel walks up to you and says, you have made the biggest mistake of your life. And you go, gee, I don't remember what it is. And you go, so now you insult my daughter on top of everything else. Yeah, I had that happen when I was 17. But that's okay. I got out of prison. I went over the wall. Hey, you know what? Mexico didn't have a lot of money at that time, you know, and their idea of prison, the wall was only this high, right? And it was just made out of dirt, for that matter. They had people out there, like, mixing bricks. They didn't even put straw in it. You know, all it took was a spoon to get out, right? You know, I went over and I took a spoon, started to scrape on the wall, and it fell over. Can't imagine how disappointed I was when I found out that Russia was the Mexico of Europe. Here, I grew up hiding, living in mortal fear of people that, you know, can't do anything. They can't even make an IC chip in that country. Where did they get them all from? They had covert operations where they bankrupt their economy buying them from us covertly. Turned out they were buying them from the CIA, $20 billion a month worth, which means probably we stand a better chance of running their missiles than they do. That thing they call the arms race that everybody talks about? We won, by the way. That's part of what happened. And they finally said, okay, we'd like a McDonald's. We want some Coca-Cola. And we need you to loan us a whole lot of money. And then they came back this year and went, it's gone. Can you loan us some more? And, of course, Bab said, sure. And of course, now we're going back. We're going to attack. Of course, I think the only time we did politics properly was with Gaddafi Duck. You guys remember Gaddafi Duck? This is a guy who took over a country, doesn't have a lot of imagination. He made himself a colonel. Now my question is, a colonel of what? But then I'm still wondering who was wearing the blue dress when the cum stain got on it. These are national politics. Excuse me, I find this embarrassing. I think people should kind of get a new attitude. See, when I started out, people said I was irreverent, and I got news for you. I was so irreverent I couldn't, because I was appalled. Virginia took me to a mental hospital, and the first day I was there, I walked up and introduced myself to somebody, and they shook my hand, and somebody said, leave him alone. And I said, oh, I'm sorry. And they said, he is catatonic. Now, I wasn't real familiar with the word, but I didn't think catatonics were supposed to shake hands with you. But you know what? It's a natural instinct that people have, right? You don't really think it over. Somebody walks right up to you and goes, hi, like that. Everywhere in the world except Japan, where they all do the handshake interrupt, every one of them. I went to Japan, I went, hi, and they go, hi. And you go, and they go, look at your hand, notice the changing focus of your vision. Isn't it interesting how the colors change in your peripheral vision as your hand moves slowly towards your head and the other hand floats involuntarily towards your wallet? As one hand comes out, the other goes slap, slap, slap. By the way, that handshake interrupt, I'll teach you all that because it's still my favorite one. Here's the trick. Okay, guys, I'm the one that told everybody Milton Erickson invented this. Milton Erickson is paralyzed in the right hand. Just how did he do the handshake interrupt? Guess he couldn't. Does that mean that I lied once more? Answer, yes. Because I was faced with all kinds of people who suffered from what I consider the big disease. They were too fucking serious. Reframing, a technique many of you have learned, right? Where you go inside and ask yourself this and blah, 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 blah. It's totally a trick, the whole thing. That's why I don't teach it anymore. I think the world has evolved enough. Therapists went like this. Every one of them all over the face of the earth. Right? They went, hypnosis is bad. And it doesn't exist. Now, I don't know about you guys. That sounds to me, what would be the word? Stupid. That's it. Stupid. But they didn't care. In California, they even signed affidavits promising they wouldn't do hypnosis because it didn't exist. Now, I don't know about you guys. It sounds a little bit like witchcraft to me, right? Finally, in England, some nice guy came along and said, you cannot kill any more people for being witches because you claim there is no such thing as witchcraft. Make up your mind. Either witchcraft is real or you have to stop killing people. And they went, oh, if you have to, I guess. But you know how those Catholics are. I mean, to me, I have a lot of trouble, but I do write the Pope constantly that I'm a firm believer in writing people who are total assholes letters. The idea that this guy got on the radio and told the people in Africa with the worst cases of AIDS and massive starvation that the important thing was to keep having babies and not use contraception. Now, I don't know about you guys, that sounds like somebody that wants to kill people and starve them. And so I wrote him a letter and said, excuse me, Mr. Penis Hat, but I don't think that any cross-dresser especially a celibate cross-dresser should be telling the world about fucking, okay? Right? Does the term shut the fuck up mean anything to you? Well, I got back the standard form letter, which I write my congressman counsel. All I get back is, the Pope has read your letter. Sure he has, right? And I get back such a nice reply that says, and your ideas have been taken into consideration. I had to frame that puppy. But then, see, I keep a little list of things because I don't like the idea of being ignorant. I have, for example, the following thing. Headline in the newspaper, the Pope reconsiders his position and decides a little masturbation is okay as long as you keep it in hand. Now, I had to frame that one. That was too good. They found out holy water's got a virus in it. This is also another headline that I chopped out and put in my book. Turns out, holy water has a mutated virus all its own. That's real Catholic holy water. By the way, I also got the formula for holy water. It's 4 pages long. See, I grew up, I thought they just went, bless you, water, and that was it. Excuse me, it's not that simple. They're down there in this church in Cologne in the basement doing things, and it's called the Black Cathedral. I don't even like the name of it. But it's where that story, the Pied Piper, was, where all the kids disappear. Sounds suspicious to me. I think we should go see what's down there. Well, what scared me is when I was in Cologne, I went over to this church, right? And there's a guy in the front of the church, you know, a priest with the white collar and everything, and one of those coin things that the bus guys have. I'm not serious. So you can go through the Stations of the Cross. I guess you not everybody has changed, so they go up, and this guy goes, excuse me, and ching, 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 ching. And I don't know about you guys, but I seem to remember something in the book about money changers in a temple. I don't know. I'm funny. I read the books before I kill people for them. And, see, I started out as a Jew, right? And I don't know about you guys, but the book ends here. It's like that. And I don't like any book that people are willing to kill each other. Because if you really read the Old Testament, the God of the Jews is not a nice guy by any means. I mean, in fact, the other gods have to be looking at Jehovah going, oh my God, that's one mean motherfucker. He got a bad attitude one day and turned around and killed everybody on the face of the fucking earth. Flooded it. You know, all he left was one family and two of each animal. So let's just say he wasn't a geneticist, shall we? Again, I hear dueling banjos. And I don't think this took place overseas. If they want to find the Ark, I think we should look in Arkansas. Don't you? Oh, Bill. Just think, and this guy ran on what grounds? It was something about the family, wasn't it? Oh, yeah, family ethics. Mm-hmm. He thought people like us, because, see, I gave up being a Jew for Lent. Decided to become a pagan, because then you get all the gods you want. I like the idea of it. Think about it. Gods everywhere. You can talk to them, and they do nice things. It's just a concept. You know, the Greeks, they had gods that were, like, fucking with people all the time. We'll wreck their lives this way. But think about it. The God of the Jews, this is the guy that killed everything on the face of the earth. Man, woman, crocodiles, and puppies. This is the puppy-killing God. Mm-hmm. So, what is it? Oh, I don't know, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock in the morning. What do you hear on your front door? Boom, 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 boom. And you open the door, and there's two people out there with their little comic books, right? And that look on their face, like somebody put a vacuum cleaner on the side of their head and sucked all their brains out, right? And they say, I've come for your soul. So I take off a shoe and just smack them with it. And I guarantee if you learn nothing else in this workshop, it'll be worthwhile. Because when you hit them with that shoe, they always look at you and go, not that soul. And you take off the other one and whack them again. They go for it every time. I've started now walking up to those guys on the street with the billboard, you know, that says, the world is going to end. And they say, good, then you won't be needing that penis, will you? I'm from the penis donation bank. Then what you do is pull a sharp object out, right, and go, please, just unzip it, and we'll put it right here in the buck. I've got some ice and stuff. You do believe in helping people, don't you? Think about the logic of this. Heaven's Gate, right? They weren't taking their body, and they knew they wouldn't need it, so they castrated themselves. Now, if you're not going to be in your body, why do you have to castrate yourself? I have a little trouble with that. What, do they think someone else is going to get in the body and use that penis when you're gone? Not only that, they're not taking their body, but they all packed their suitcases. So you're not going to need the body, but you're going to need your clothes. Mm-hmm, because, see, I get nervous. I have people all the time who come and go, you do modeling, and it's so wonderful. I think your work is really brilliant. And I was hoping that you could model this channeler I know. And I go, channeler? First time I heard this, I went, what the hell is a channeler? And my wife nudged me and she said, a medium, you know. And I said, you mean you're talking about people that talk to dead people? And they go, we prefer to refer to them as disincorporated spirits. And I said, well, I prefer to talk about them as dead people. Right? Now, when it comes right down to it, I spend a lot of time talking to dead people. If you know what I mean. Somebody asked me in Ann Arbor, Michigan, I will never forget that. This person raised their hand and said, do you ever work with the deaf and the dumb? And I said, every day, ma'am, every day. And some guy went, huh? And I said, see what I mean? Northwestern University, one of our favorites here, did a study at which they proved, as far as they could see, that there was no such thing as representational system, but they felt it was worth further investigation. This is the letter I get in the mail, and I said, excuse me, whoever wrote this, I said, I'd like to write back to your unconscious, really unconscious, completely unconscious. I said, now let your conscious mind, whatever amount there is of it, just fade away forever, and let your unconscious, which knows all about this, come forward. It's in Betty Boop commercials. I mean, you go back in the 20s and look at Betty Boop cartoons, and they go, gee, Betty, what do you want to do today? She goes, bing, and makes a picture of what she wants to do. Now, cartoonists knew about this, right? I didn't say I made it up. I just said I found it, right? I just paid attention. That's all. But you see, that's because I wasn't interpreting things. I was not one of those enlightened human beings who knows everything because I went to college too long. See, I got the degrees, but when I got my degree, I had a hard time finding the campus. I had to give, for my doctorate, I had to give a colloquial. That's where you go in and you give a 45-minute talk about what you've done for 3 years, right? And I was late because I couldn't find the campus. Since my name starts with B, I had to wait all the way to the end because they had been started with the C's, where people did studies on things like orgasmicity. They did a study, perfectly, things. They went out to women's battered shelters and asked women about their sexual fantasies to find out the relationship between the vividness of their fantasies and their ability to have orgasms. Now, I don't consider this a random cross-section of the population. Women who are in a shelter because they just got the crap kicked out of them by some guy who drinks too much, right? I don't know if that really puts you in the mood to really have sex fantasies anyway. Murder fantasies, maybe, but sex fantasies, I don't know. But I had to sit there and listen to this nonsense, right? And in the meanwhile, my thesis wasn't accepted. After all, I had no statistics. no statistical studies. I said, well, formal patterns in mathematics are considered like, because it works all the time. If it doesn't work, it's not a part of the set, right? Statistics is where you don't know what the pattern is. That's what a statistic is. A statistic says, something's going on here, but we don't know what the fuck it is, right? Sometimes they get cancer and sometimes they don't. My grandfather smoked 3 packs of cigarettes a day and outlived all 3 of his doctors. And he didn't die of lung cancer. Mm-mm. He choked on a sandwich. Now, what do? Outlaw sandwiches? Dun, 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 dun. Or do we outlaw the people who made his false teeth because they got stuck in the sandwich? I.e., death is caused by false teeth. So dentists are really murdering people. And everyone will agree with that, I think. It's like these are people that say, well, they pull out that big needle and they hold it up just to make sure you can see it. Do you ever notice that? They go, let me numb that a little bit. And they grab a hold of your mouth and they go, poof. And they hold it up and they go, now, I know this is going to hurt a little bit. Boy, like you already knew that, didn't you? Even the first time, you don't go, ooh, this is going to be fun. See, I had a dentist do this to me, and I kicked him right in the nuts. Boom, just like that. And I went, you're right. It's so simple. If we have any dentists, don't do that. Just say the word soften. You know, I mean, I believe me, my diabetes, before they diagnosed me as a diabetic, they kept misdiagnosing me because I was spent so much time controlling my metabolism that it didn't show up right? And so they kept giving me things they decided because I couldn't stand up. I literally passed out projectile vomiting in the Waldorf Hotel on the Strand while Princess Di was having a fashion show in the lobby. I walked in, got to the elevator, pressed the thing. The world was spinning, and I went all over the place. They called a doctor in, and the doctor decided it was an inner ear infection. Gave me medicine, and it said right on the side of the bottle, not to give it to diabetics, right? But so as soon as I started taking this stuff, I started really getting sick. And of course, then my teeth started falling out because basically I couldn't get anything through a cell wall to feed anything. That's what happens to diabetics. You can't, the insulin doesn't do anything with sugar or anything. It just makes it so that you can pass things through your cell wall. And I woke up in a coma. But you know what did it for me? Even in a coma, I'm an asshole. Finally got me where they wanted to. They got me in a hospital finally, totally unfucking conscious. And some prick-ass doctor in there came walking in with his golf shoes on, clicking across the floor, and said, have you done a spinal tap? I want a spinal tap. And I sat up and grabbed him by the throat and said, shall we do it now, doc? I don't remember this. They told me about it. Apparently, I got a new doctor right away. They gave me the outcast, the woman Irish doctor who walked in and did everything right, made it so that I was fine. But then she doesn't play golf. She stays after work and talks to her patients. And she told me, you know, that she's always thought of herself as a healer. And I said, well, most doctors may be a heel, but healing is not what they're there for. We select out of the medical profession the people that would make good healers because they could never make it through medical school. I live near a medical school in San Francisco, and somebody handed me one of the catalogs one day, said, you've got to see this. And they're a medical student, and there's a class on how to touch and personally. Like, you have to learn this, right? And I mean, like, it's not personal to stick your finger up somebody's ass. It seems pretty personal to me. I don't know about you guys, but, you know, somebody's going to stick their finger up your ass. Oh, you like this? When I was in ICU, which, by the way, strange thing happened. I went into ICU. I never made it into the rest of the hospital. After 4 days, I went back out and taught a workshop because something mysterious happened. On the 3rd floor, everybody started getting well and going home. They have no explanation for this. There was just this sound at night of a little stand with an IV wheeling up and down the hallways. Well, there's nothing like people who are in a tremendous amount of pain, right? And in the middle of the night, you know, when they're drugged, because they give you pills to sleep, like when you're in a coma, you can't. My nurse's name was Shirley Love. Don't you love that? It's, man, I knew something was going on. So I started going by reading the charts, right? Because I heard these doctors talking to this poor guy next to me. He's got a tube down his throat, right? And, you know, I guess that's not a good sign. And he's got a machine go, and these doctors come in and start talking about somebody else, right? Now, I knew it because I was sitting up watching TV, but I also knew because I could see this guy respond, right? They'd go, oh, you know, that operation we did last week? And he said, it's a darn shame, but, you know, I thought he was going to pull through, but his vital signs are just dropping. And I'd see his heart thing go, do-do-do, do-do-do, do-do-do. And it started to become arrhythmic. And the guy had just had a triple bypass, but somehow or other he bypassed getting out of it well. But they weren't talking about him. They were talking about this other guy. And they were saying, yeah. And they said, well, it's a real shame. You know, I said, I had to tell his wife. And the minute they did that, the blood pressure went right through the fucking ceiling. Now, they're standing in the same room. I'm on the other side of the drape, and I can see the fucking thing. They're standing there, and suddenly it goes, it's going up like this. And it's making noise. It's doing all this stuff. And the guy slaps the machine and says, what's the matter with this? It's going too fast. And it goes, and slows down. And I thought, well, this seems like somebody's fairly responsive, you know? I couldn't help myself then. The minute they walked out of the room, it was like, well, they turn the TV off at night. I can't even watch that. They tell you, you must sleep. I said, I was in a coma. Why are you telling me to sleep? Seems like that should be the last thing I should be doing. You know, when you're in a coma, you have to teach these doctors the magic word is wake up. Right? Because what I did is I had somebody call me on the telephone. Right? I had to reconnect it. You know, they disconnected at the switchboard, the stingy motherfuckers. So I went out and went behind the panel and hooked it up so they couldn't do that anymore. They could push the switch, but it didn't do anything, but it gave them a feeling of satisfaction. But we all could get our phone calls then. But then what I did is I had somebody call on the phone, and as soon as it rang, I went, it's for you! Right? And I got, and this guy opened his eyes, and I said, wake up! I said, take this fucking phone. I said, I'm not taking any more phone calls for you. Get up! And the guy went, like that, and pulled a tube out of his throat, and I said, it's probably a lot easier to breathe that way. Right, and you know, in the nurse's station, it went, ah! You know, and this nurse came running in, and by that time, he was sitting up, and like, you got to hand it, this guy was too cool. He was an old Irish guy, it had to be about 70 years old. He walked in, and he goes, does anybody have a cigarette? Speaking of which, they told me, and for years, they've said, why don't you quit smoking? You know all the NLP, and I saw my grandfather, and I wasn't quitting. I started smoking after I met him. When I met him, I was on my way to London. Now, I have to admit, he had eaten out of a few too many aluminum cans. Because when I said I was on my way to London, he said, you don't want to go to London. It's all bombed out. And I said, well, that was in, you know, the Second World War. And he goes, yeah? Is it over yet? And I said, well, it's a matter of opinion, I guess. The Germans now want to unify Europe. And I still think there's a few too many boot stores before I want the head of all of Europe to be in Germany. But they feel they know how to organize better. And the only trouble is they get too miffed. I know, I go there. In German, there is no word for kind of. Sort of, might be, that sort of thing. Everything is, it must be, it has to be. No modal operator is a possibility. You say maybe by saying no yes. Naya. That's the only way you can say maybe is to go no yes. So when you go to Germany, of course, there's also no word in German for mind. That explains a lot, doesn't it? Translating my book, they sent a guy all the way from Germany who said, well, this word mind, and I said, yeah. And he said, well, we don't have a word like that, but we have, and he shows me 4 pages. In German, one sentence. And I went, what is this? And I said, because I don't read German or speak German. The guy who works for me does, and he reads it, and he goes, well, it's a long kind of metaphorical description of what it would be like if you had a mind. Any of you have talked to Brahm, who works for me, he has a way with words, just kind of cutting to the chase. But then he grew up in Germany. His father was German, his mother was Korean. Great combination. It makes you not only impatient and intolerant, but pissed off about it to start with. And he actually was a client of mine, and his father was all upset because he had no motivation. And I worked with him once, and then I saw him 3 years later, and he had like three jobs. And I said, gee, maybe you should work for me. I can't get anybody in my office to do much of anything. You know, they sit around and look at the phone and go, wow, that's cool. What does it do? Oh, that's what you talk to your mother on. So I hired him and fired everybody else. And when he was working there one day, his father called up, Ollie, pissed off. Because they fought like over everything. And he had bounced a check in his own checking account. And for some reason, the bank called his dad. It was just a small banking error, but his father was going crazy. And so I said to him, I said, look, I said, you're so upset. I said, if you don't want them, give them to me. And his father said, what? I said, you give them to me. I said, if you want to visit him, it's fine, but he'll be mine. That way you never have to worry about any problem with him ever again. And he said, great, that's cool. So I sent him a little letter saying, I trade you one cassette tape recorder for my son. And when Brahm came in, I said, your dad gave you to me. You're mine now. And so he comes to Christmas at my house and Easter. We celebrate every holiday, not like everybody else does, but, as my children don't come at Christmas because of the black tree with the pentagrams. I'll tell you, it cuts down on the traffic when they come through the door. My house sort of looks like, let's just say, the scene from a horror movie, maybe. But I've gone all over the world, and I travel, and I collect odd things that I have found are useful. And they really do keep people out of my house because I have them all lined up at the door, statues of black gods like this and all kinds of odd sundry things all facing the door. And then, see, my background, by the way, is in physics and engineering. I'm the hardware guy. I'm the guy that actually built a lab and made holograms. Carl Pregroom, who said the mind was holographic, traveled around the world with a thing showing people holograms of a flat picture. Excuse me, I don't get it. If you're going to make the hologram, make it of an object. He got a hologram of a flat picture. He took a hologram, and not only that, it was a slide. He took a hologram of a slide so that there was a curved surface, and then you'd see a flat picture behind it. It seems to defeat the purpose for me. My company even, by the way, did the Chinese, when we had ping pong diplomacy, they were afraid to take Chinese art objects and send them around the country because they could get broken or stolen, beautiful pieces of jade and stuff. So they sent them to my company, and we made holograms of them all, put them in cases with a laser in the bottom and four holographic plates and nothing in the inside. Now, I want you to consider this. They gave me, my lab is in my basement, a priceless Chinese art collection to make holograms of. And they were such great holograms. Nobody ever knew that the thing went around the country. But I actually had to call on the phone when I finally sold the company and the house and was moving to get somebody to come out and get this shit out of my house. Right. Now, they brought it out under armed guards and left it all at my house. Right? No armed guards, nothing. Like, they just had me sign, and I signed for it. Sure, what is it? Opened the crates, and here are these beautiful pieces of stuff and a letter in there, you know, saying, as per our agreement. But then I couldn't figure out who to give it back to. Afterwards, they came and they got they had a guy whose job it was to come and take the holograms, and they took them all over the country. Right, so everybody went in, and I even read the art reviews about, you know, this is a beautiful piece of this and that, and there was nothing there. Because what holograms are real hallucinations. Now, when I started out a long time ago, I made up NLP, and what NLP is, in a nutshell, is that you find out how somebody does something, and you get somebody else to do it the same way. But you don't do it by the way they believe they're doing it, you have them do what they're actually doing. So, for example, how many of you learned to spell pahonically? And probably you're not a very good speller, are you? Because you can't even spell phonetics phonetically. Now, I don't know, if I was the guy that made up phonetics, I wouldn't have named it that. I would have, as I was writing that down, gone, well, because, well, you know, that PH is really an F. Mm-hmm, sure it is. Right. That's like silent letters. If they're silent, what are they for? Long E's and short E's? Mm-hmm. Oh, and of course your vowels, A-E-I-O-U, that's and sometimes Y. How come only sometimes? Doesn't make any sense. Sound this word out, caught. You want to be mentally retarded? Start sounding out words. I used to like to go up to teachers and go, can you sound this out for me? And there are some of them that when you sound them out, you know, come out really nice. They go, fucked. Fucked. Now, German, by the way, being the way Germans are, you can actually spell German phonetically, pretty much. It works. All the other languages on the face of the earth, doesn't work. But yet, people are constantly saying, now, here's some words. Go home and memorize them. Does that sound like teaching to you? Here's one of my favorites. I took English composition in college, and the guy came out the first day and said, your first assignment is to write a story. Now get out of here. And I walked up and I said, how do you write a story? And he got pissed off. He said, are you a freshman? And I said, no, I'm a black belt, fifth degree. And I didn't have any stinking badges, nor mats where I grew up. We were in Chinatown. We used concrete. It makes you fall down a lot less. Does, by the way, you know. There's just something about those mats that make it so, well, if you fall down, you know, it's no big deal. Concrete, you feel totally different about. In fact, my teacher had slightly different views. He was not into self-defense at all. His favorite thing to say was, hit them first. And with anything you can get your hands on. This guy could take anything and make it into a weapon. To him, he said, the world is just, weapons are everywhere. And I mean, you know, to him, like a plate, man. Right? He was the one, like, you know, when he looked at a plate, he didn't see a thing to put food on. He saw it going into somebody's throat from being a Frisbee. This is a guy that took a little paper they used to throw on the front porch every Wednesday. It was free and it had sales at the supermarket. He could take one of those and fan it out and cut somebody to ribbons with the thing. Paper cuts were his life, right? I saw him fight this guy who had a nunchucks and he went, this thing like that. My teacher picked up one of these newspapers and took the rubber band off and shot it like this. And when the guy looked, he went, and the guy had like 70 paper cuts, was bleeding from hand to toe. My teacher took the nunchuck thing out of his hand and went, very, very dangerous weapon, threw it away. He was really scary, by the way. That's, by the way, one of the reasons I noticed accessing cues is he used to stand us in a line, and the minute we weren't in full attention, or what we call uptime in NLP, we were on the concrete, and you never saw it. This guy was too fast. He would just stand there, and suddenly his foot would come over his shoulder and knock your ass down. So we didn't do a lot of this, let's see stuff. But I did notice that when the new guy came in, that he would go, bam, over here we go. So when I started working with people, I thought that's what you were supposed to do. Because I saw this funny thing. First it was, I got a job as an editor, and I went down, and there was this guy who was supposed to work with crazy people. And boy, were they crazy. Loony as loony could be, right? I walked in, and this guy was talking to a beanbag. He was sitting on a beanbag, talking to a beanbag, right? And this old fart smoking cigarettes sitting next to him was going, he goes, I want you to tell him how angry you are. And this guy looks at the beanbag and goes, I'm angry at you. And he goes, say it louder. And he goes, I'm angry at you. And he said, what does he say? And everybody in the room turned and looked at the beanbag. And I went, uh-oh! And there was still nobody in the fucking beanbag, as far as I could tell. And the guy said, he told me he only did it because he loved me. And I went, and I thought, boy, man, that tequila was way too strong last night. This is the worst hangover I've ever had. And then he had him get mad and attack the fucking thing. He went berserk. He was like a rabid fucking dog. He went, say it, say you're angry. I'm angry. He said, pound that fist. And the guy was bang. And he goes, now, louder, louder. I'm angry. And he goes, hit him. And he goes flying over and attacks the beanbag. Well, I couldn't help it. I grabbed him, threw him up against the wall and said, leave that beanbag alone. It didn't do anything to you. And nobody thought that was funny. I thought it was funny, though, because the guy looked over and I said, look, there's nobody there. Well, Fritz didn't think this was funny at all. He said, I was interrupting the therapeutic process. And I said, so hallucinating dead relatives is good for you? I'm sorry, but I wrote Fritz's last two books, and he died while I was trying. And I like that everybody says he was so clear in the end of his life. Well, actually, it was slightly afterwards. That's not that I didn't agree with his theories. It's just that I couldn't make any sense out of them. So I made up new ones. Editorial license. In my new book, I kill the editor because they did things like when I wrote Patterns 1, they went through and corrected Milton's grammar. Talk about somebody that really got the content of the book. One column says transcript. The other has, in the first sentence, it says sentence fragment, incomplete sentence. And that's because when you use incomplete sentences, it really focuses people's attention. When you look at somebody, as Milton did, and he said, now, Nick, I want you to watch Hal Mundy's face. And Nick goes, see, if I tell you all, I want you to watch how the tablecloth. Your brain goes. And it goes into that mode that goes, it's just like that one on the computer that just has the blank, and until you fill in the one, it won't go any further. It's the same thing. It goes input statement. The brain goes, and then you just wait. And then you give what I consider to be the finest ambiguity that Milton ever supplied us all with. You look at somebody and you go, you're unconscious now. Wants to know. But you're unconscious, by the way, is a command. If you read Milton, always keep that in mind and he will make a lot more sense. Because when he says, you're unconscious now, wants to know. And I always tell people, you have terrible problems. No more. A lot more. You see, how do you do, see, I discovered something. And the reason I really switched from doing straight NLP, because we would go and take a strategy. It's great for spelling. You tell people, hey, make a picture of that word, right? Look at it and copy down the letters. It's a lot easier. People go, well, yeah, but I have the wrong letters up there. Well, when you're putting the letters up, you have to put the right ones the first time. See, like with kids, I make each letter a different color. And then, you know, I show them, first I do is I tell them, because they gave me kids. I taught the fifth grade. Can you imagine that? In 2 weeks. And guess how the school, you'd think that would make them happy, right? They gave me all the worst kids in the school, all the ones at the bottom of the class. And the first 3 days, I taught them all to spell. Sent them back in, gave them the same spelling test as everybody else, and they did the best. And what did the teachers do? They sent in the Christians. They decided I was doing it through demonology. I didn't even know what demonology was at the time, but I was always willing to learn. So now I have all kinds of new allies in my work. And I never could understand what the fear of satin is anyway, you know. I know you have trouble getting traction and all that, but it's really not that big of a problem.
I have on my door now a picture of an eye and a warship and a piece of satin. And it's like when people come up and they go, I, big ship, cloth. I, big ship cloth. Doesn't make any sense to me. And they knock on the door and say, I've come for your soul. Whack! Not that soul, whack! Every time. Or I like that. And people go, well, what is this? And I go, that's an eye. That's a warship. And feel it. It's satin. And they go, I worship satin. And I go, you do, not me. I know who he is. He works for me sometimes. But, you know, I know things that he's terrified of. Because you know what that whole thing was about. Read the book, man. It was just a couple of gay guys having a big thing about clothes. It's all about, you know, well, I'm prettier than anyone here. That's what Asmodeus said, you know. And, of course, you know, the God of the Jews, the jealous bastard. He, by the way, he's the one that said, thou shalt put no other gods before me. Doesn't that mean there are others? Boy, talk about something that shuts these Christians up fast. They go, well, I said, you don't take the word of the Bible as the word of the Lord? Literally? And they go, because it says, thou shalt put no others before me. That means there are others. Right? And what is it about being first in line? What's the big deal? Right? And why was he so upset? Because this one wanted to look prettier than the other one? Excuse me, there's a lot of people dying about all of this stuff, and it's all about some gay guys that just are going, I'm prettier than you are. No. I live down by the Castro in San Francisco, so I see this stuff all the time. And it could get way out of hand. People's feelings get hurt. Nations get destroyed. To me, you know, that if they read the book, they would understand there are some things that maybe can be taken a little too literally, you know, especially when they were written by people out in the desert. For example, that thing about, you know, I mean, Catholics aren't supposed to have sex and Jews aren't supposed to eat pork. I don't know about you guys, but when I initially weighed those out, I thought, well, I can get by without the pork. I'm not really that big on sausage anyway, you know. At one point, you know, I kind of pretty much became, you know, a vegetarian, mostly because I don't think that most meat really is that good for you. When you get meat that's good meat, it is, but most of the stuff is, you know, they're out there giving it chemicals, feeding it DDT, and so I don't eat too much meat. I go straight for the soul instead. When people come up and they say things like this, doctors for years have told me I had to quit smoking. And finally, this woman, this Irish woman, explained to me how the medicine that you take as a diabetic, that if you smoke, it's likely that you'll become impotent. That did it for me. And she said, so you're going to have to quit. And I said, I already quit. And she shook her head and she said, no, I'm serious, you know, that. And she gave me literature. And you know, in all the literature, it has you prepare for over a month before you even cut down? Excuse me, right? I quit in a cold second. And I recommend, if any of you are going to quit, that's exactly how you do it. No matter what it is, it's really simple. Everybody's doing this all wrong. Everybody's trying to fight with the cravings. Let me ask you this. Isn't it true that every person in this room every once in a while has some really strong cravings that you don't act on? You look over at somebody and you go, God, I'd love to fuck that person. I'd like to strip them naked and lick them all over. Now, you don't have to act on it, do you? Just because you have strong sensations doesn't mean you have to rape everybody you see, does it? You don't, do you? Now, would you give up being able to have those kind of feelings? Would you, like, make it so that, you know, when you looked at your wife and she's all dolled up and dressed and on her way out the door, and you had strong feelings, you don't, like, jump on her in the dirt and go, fuck that, you're not going to that meeting, the hell with it, you know, and rape her and stuff. You don't do that. You try to, but you don't. She goes, ah, watch the hair. And I go, I was watching. But no, I mean, you know, but would you not have those feelings? Would you make it so that when you saw something totally wonderful, you went, because if you do that, you'll end up like those people did at Esalen. You know that concentration camp out on the West Coast for people who have had far too much psychology? They, you know, when the first time I went there, I went there to help a guy finish his book. And then somebody said, have you been into the hot tubs yet? And I said, I beg your pardon? And they said, it's part of the Esalen experience. And I went, really? And I said, what is this? And they said, well, you go down this little pathway to the cliffs. They have beautiful silver hot tubs out on the cliffs. And everybody takes their clothes off and sits in them. And I said, yeah. And they said, no bathing suits. And I went. So they all go down naked and get in these things. So I went to my room, got my bathing suit, my Polaroid camera. And I walked down there, and I walked up to one of the hot tubs, and I looked at this woman, and I said, great tits. Well, I guess I didn't grow up in the same neighborhood they did. And suddenly, everybody there knew they were naked. It was like they were trying to make it so when they were around naked people, they didn't respond. Now, I don't know about you guys, but when I'm with somebody in there naked, I want to know it. I either want to be getting the fuck out of there or the fuck in there, one or the other. What idiots these people were. They paid zillions of dollars to go and sit and be naked and not respond. That's the last thing you want to be doing, you know? Because I ended up having all these kinds of people as clients that would go in and they'd go, well, when I was younger, you know, I used to be able to get an erection. And I'd look at them and go, say what? What do you mean used to? And they go, well, you know, now that I'm in my 30s. And I go, I hope this isn't universal, you know? This is why I started doing the thing where I started looking at and saying, look, not only do we need to be able to take somebody who's a good speller and teach other people to spell, somebody who is a good golfer and find out. See, I found out that these golfers, one of the, because I have trouble with this knocking balls all over the place thing. My dog looked at me one day and said, what is it with Americans? They're always chasing balls, right? And he said, you know, they've even got all the dogs doing it, for Christ's sake. You couldn't get my dog to chase a ball for the life of you. I mean, you know, you take a ball and you go, she'll run back and forth, and when you throw it, she goes. Looks at you, looks at the ball, looks at you, looks at the ball, and people will go get the ball. She turned around and she said to me, see, I can do this to anybody. And of course, you know, there was a time in my life where, you know, everybody thought, they kept telling me, they said, look, man, if you just put on a suit, three-piece suit, get your teeth capped, you know, and stop swearing all the time, you know, we could make you a lot more money than you're making now. And I went, oh, cool. You know, then I could go out and get people all worked up and not teach them anything. There's plenty of people. I can send people to someone for that. You know, I've got lots of people for that. Think about this walking across hot coals thing. Excuse me, I want people to walk around hot coals. All right? Because you know what will happen? It doesn't turn their fears, right? It doesn't work. It doesn't turn their fears into courage. It makes them stupid about coals. They come up to me all the time in the workshop. They go, I've done the firewalk 43 times. And I go, well, boy, we got the point of that, didn't we? I said, next time, stop in the middle for a while. That's what I like to do, run out of the bushes and go, stop! Never mind. See, I don't really think it's a challenge unless the smell of burning flesh is there. I like to throw a couple of pork chops since I'm not going to eat them. Throw them out there on the flames so when people walk up and they go, cool, Mosh, cool. What's that? Yeah, it's just Richard barbecuing on the side. But then look at all the crap they tried to convince me of that was good for people. Oh, yeah, talking to empty chairs. I have a black belt in Gestalt therapy. I fear no furniture. But I just don't think it's going to make you more mentally sane to be talking to empty chairs. I mean, to me, you know, people are always coming up. After I told them about rep systems, that, you know, people make pictures, they talk to themselves, they have feelings, and they can make smells and tastes. They can't tell them apart that well, but actually 40% of the visual cortex goes on to the kinesthetic cortex. 40% of the auditory cortex goes on to the kinesthetic cortex. You see, as a physicist, we know it's all part of one part of the electromagnetic spectrum, but there are all kinds of things that people kept forgetting. For example, they kept forgetting things like this, like you're not always right, and that's good. Richard went in. I went and investigated everything. I felt up trees. I tried everything. It did not make me saner to be having an intimate relationship with a tree, right? Trust circles. Well, I didn't feel it really took trust unless somebody got dropped. Now it took trust. And they'd look and they go, well, this time you're not going to drop me, are you, Richard? And I go, me? Never. Trust me. And sure enough, poof, down they'd go. You know, some of these jerks would do this 15, 20 times, and every time all I had to do is be sincere. Well, I know I've done it over and over again, but I now know how important it is to you. So there's no way, I mean, all of you, really, I know, I'm not trying to make fun of what you do because it's totally ridiculous. I'm not trying to embarrass you into realizing that when you walk out of this room, there are people out there that are going to fucking drop you. And what you really need is the ability to get back up and not close your eyes and get passed around backwards, right? You know, it's like if you ever have to go to jail, right, and you drop your soap, well, the first time maybe when you pick it up, you're in for a surprise. But after that, we call it a fetish. All these clients came to me, they had fetishes for pain. People would come in and they go, it really makes me feel so bad when you look at me that way. And I go, which way was that specifically? This woman put on one of the first NLP seminars for women in Berkeley, communist nation on the West Coast. Even Cuba has capitalism, but Berkeley hasn't fallen yet. But, I mean, and this was in the late 60s when women were really into feminism. That is, you know, they thought being liberated was picking lots of words to feel bad about and dressing as poorly as possible. Gaining weight and complaining about men and making them the focus of their life. This did not strike me as feminism at all. And I didn't really have a chance to do much about it till this woman got sick. And she got sick, and the day before hospital, she got flu so bad that she couldn't even get out of bed. And she called and said, I don't know what to do. These people are all already on their way from all over the world. Top feminists from everywhere. And I went, ooh. And I went, I'll do it. And she said, no way. And I said, trust me. Everything will be fine. So I walked out on the stage and told them about how sick she was and that I didn't think it was fair for them to come all this way out there and that, you know, they could get their money back at noon, all of it, and I said, or they could decide to stay if they wanted to, but that I was going to teach the morning because I didn't think that you babes deserved this kind of a bad treatment. And you should have seen the smoke go. And I said, okay, now, look at it this way, honey. And this woman stood up and went, what's the matter with you? Have you got no raised consciousness? And I said, I beg your pardon. You seem to have a problem, sweetie. What is it? I said, come here, sugar. Come on right up here. And she was like, mm. I mean, you should have seen, man, the color changes, the blood pressure going way up, man. And I'm going, anchoring it, firing it off. She's like, and she runs up to the stage. And I went, wait. She went like this. And I said, did I say something that made you feel bad? She went, and I said, what was it? And she went, you said, honey. And I wrote on the blackboard, honey, sugar, babes, sweet cheeks, and then started writing them all down. And I said, are there any other things I can say that will make anyone here feel bad? We got about 26, 27 of them, and I managed to incorporate them all in one sentence. And just as everybody in there was headed for their first coronary or lynching, I said, excuse me, but what I do is all about freedom, and freedom is not based on making yourself feel bad. Freedom is also not based on fear. So where we're starting here today, and all of this kidding around that I was doing was actually a trick, but I guess you guys know that. It's not as covert as it used to be. I have this funny theory that if people can attach good feelings to learning, they'll do it more often. Just an idea. Like, if I watch my kid go to school, hate it, and it was just so boring. These teachers were so boring, you know. And I was constantly down there because, you know, they always did that thing where they take my son into the principal's office and call me at 8 o'clock in the morning. Right? Big mistake. They'd even try to embarrass him because we kept having new principals for some reason. Well, they felt compelled suddenly to do things like join the Peace Corps. And they didn't know why. Just woke up the next day and they had this really strong urge inside themselves to do something decent for humanity for a change rather than torture children. But they call on the phone and they go, is this Mr. Bandler? And I go, no, it's Dr. Bandler. Who the fuck are you? And they go, well, I have your son in my office. This is the principal of the school. And I go, isn't he supposed to be in class? And I'd hear a snicker in the background. And I go, uh-huh. I go, here comes the dickhead speaks. Because I remember what they did to me. They used to kick me out of school for cutting school. What a bargain. Think about it. You cut one day and they give you five off. So I'd calculate, how much time do I need off? We're going to go to L.A., we're going to record. How long do you think this is going to take? And they go, well, 3 weeks. And I go, well, then I have to cut 3 days so I can get enough time off to go down and do this. Right? So I'd just skip school for 3 days, and I'd come in, and they go, you were absent. And I'd go, no, no, I cut school. 3 days. You owe me 3 weeks. I'd even do all my work ahead of time because I knew I was going with the teachers. I'd go, what are we going to do for the next 3 weeks? They'd lay it out, and I'd go and give them all the work. And they go, well, that's nice that you're really studying. It's not like you. And I go, well, I just have a feeling I'm going to be punished. And what scared me is some teachers, when I use that word punished, they go. But then we know Hillary's probably got some long boots and a whip in the closet somewhere, don't we? Because certainly Bill is a glutton for punishment. And you guys know about Tipper. I'm so glad that they didn't impeach Bill, because the idea of a president whose name is Gore, excuse me, I have trouble with that out of the gate. And we all remember the big scandal of Satan being on the records backwards. I have two questions about that. Miss Tipper Gore is the one that started all that, you know. Number one, I want to know where she got a record to play backwards, what got in her mind to actually play the record backwards. I don't know what she was smoking, but my guess is whatever it was, she inhaled. Can you believe they elected a guy who said, oh, yeah, I smoke marijuana, I just didn't inhale. Then why did you put the joint in your mouth? Well, I was trying to deceive people so they would think I was one of them, or else I'm just lying through my teeth. Or I'm so stupid I don't know how a joint works. I hadn't met Hillary yet.